This is Stu Strauss, the Woodsman, and you're listening to Inspirato Projecto.
I'm going up to the train station. I'm taking a healthy jaunt over to Lawrence August's place. He's going to be driving me up to Hermosa Beach tonight. Tomorrow is a big event that his stepbrother Tony is putting together. His stepbrother Tony has been working strong, I would say over the past 10 years and more, on a program called Operation Tone Up. And it's this program at schools to get kids healthy, eating right, figuring out, you know, taking a look at nutrition facts. It's a sensation sweep in the nation. They've done this at a lot of schools. He's gotten a lot of news, a lot of coverage on this thing. And yet, still somehow, he says it's not generating much of an income, I guess. But there's a website where it's kind of like a video game. And the schools, they pay for access to it, and the kids get like a password. They go onto this thing. They go onto something called Knowledge Island. And all over Knowledge Island, there are various places that you can go on it, that you can click on. It's an adventure. And so there are various characters that represent certain food groups. There's ice water. There's carby, who is carbohydrates. There's a bunch of them. And so there are all these cartoon characters on the website. You get to know these cartoons characters and everything, and so they issue these challenges at these schools. And so these kids at the schools, they compete against each other with fitness and all this stuff. Now, on the website, they can interact with it because they're learning about nutrition. There's a drag and drop workout. One about push-ups, one for sit-ups, all this stuff. And you can kind of drag and drop your workout, and each one has its own video. So you can watch the video while you're working out. So you're, in a sense, you're working out along with the videos. And it's really interesting. So this year, I think they did one last year too. This year, it's out in Hermosa Beach. I don't know if, you know, what the whole situation is, how big this thing is going to be. It sounds pretty enormous. I guess kids from all over the country come in to be a part of this. And so, yeah, they want me to do camera work there. So I'll be doing some cameras tonight for this crazy event. And he's going to bring two cameras, so I can have one that's set up on a tripod, and then the other one I'm going to sort of like have handheld and kind of move around that way. Roving camera operator, if you will. So that'll be fun and interesting. He was asking me for pointers on how to get more eyes on it, get more people taking a look at it. So I gave him some ideas and suggestions that I've seen work with Yachtly Crew and a little bit with Kapow and some other projects. So I told him that, yeah, I would do my best, you know, to plant the seed wherever I can and in areas where I think people would be interested in coming across such information, and where people already love that kind of information. So that could be Facebook groups, that could be Facebook pages, anything that has to do with kids' health, fitness, family. I'm sure there's some family health, family exercise pages. You just plant it in there and see how they take to it. So we're gonna see what happens today. I'll most likely broadcast some more while we are on the bus, as there will undoubtedly be plenty of material to flow through at that point. So, having said that, we will talk more later, and goodbye. Wowzers. I ended up missing that first bus, so I took the second bus. There's a 26 minute wait, so I decided to stop at a coffee bean, and while I was in there, I had one of those cold pressed coffees, which is like 30% more caffeine than a regular cup of coffee. So I had that, and went back and was talking on the phone, Vince, actually, my buddy Vince. And I went back across the street and was talking with him, and then I realized that I was about to get my notebook to see stuff, and I realized, oh my god, my notebook's in my bag, oh my god, my bag is still in that coffee bean. So luckily, I was only across the street, ran back, and I got my bag untouched, unscathed. That was awesome. So then I get on the bus. I go to pay for my bus fare, and it turns out I didn't have any money on it. The guy kind of looks like Stan Lee, the bus driver. He was cool about letting me stay on the bus, so that was really, really cool. That was really cool. He said, just make sure it's, you got fare on it next time, and I said, okay, for sure. I thought I had at least one more ride on my tap card. So, I was on the phone with Vince, and Vince has some great ideas. This is the thing, folks. Surround yourself with people. When you get off the phone, you go, wow, that was a hearty conversation. That was a hearty, informative, enlightening, exciting, encouraging, inspiring conversation. It'd be nice to be able to get off the phone with every person you talk to and be able to say that and to feel that way. Imagine if you were that person. We have that potential to be that person to someone else. How cool is that? We have that potential. We have the potential to be the person who inspires someone. They get off the phone, they feel good about themselves. Someone that we talked to on the phone, and he said, tell me about your passions, tell me about your dreams, what do you like doing, and what are some of your favorite hobbies, etc., etc., etc. And then finding out about him and going, let's explore that. What can we do? What can we do? What can we do? So funny. My old department manager, Greg, he's got a buddy. Anytime I talk to him on the phone, he's my former apartment manager, and he'll call me up. He's usually just down in the dumps, talking about some other terrible thing that's going on. And then he usually supplements it with some stories of his, I feel like I've told this story already. I'll save it for another. Well, okay. So he's always talking about his good old days of working, touring with Bo Diddley and all these people. He was in a Beatles tribute band. He played Ringo in a Beatles tribute band. So this guy has toured a lot. I mean, one of the guys he toured with, it was just him and this other guy who was a great guitarist. Was a friend of his. And he's like, Greg, I'm 60 years old, I'm out there touring. You should be out there playing drums. And I'm like, Greg, it sounds to me like that's what you really need to do. You're always reminiscing about the good old days. You sound miserable. I said, we can either die with a whole buttload of regrets and looking back on our life and going, I spent a majority of my life complaining about how I wish my life was different. I need to go to die that way, or I don't let's say you're struggling. He's struggling right now financially. So either we just struggle financially and not do what we love doing, find excuses to not do what we love doing, or we struggle financially and at least use that as the saving grace, as they say. Use that as the energizer, using our passions and talents as the energizer, as the thing that wakes us up. And inspires us and gets us rocking and rolling. So I said, it sounds to me, Greg, you know, this is a message from the universe. Talking to you, saying, hey man, you got the buddy who's trying to get you involved, you got your friend, you know, encouraging you, maybe it's time to do something. What's interesting was, right when I started saying that, all of a sudden he's like, okay man, well, I'll talk to you later. You know, he just hung up right away. So it's interesting how a lot of folks when they're confronted with their possibility of really diving in to their passions and talents, they shrink. You know, they just melt. Even when there's a path that's laid out from the left, just walk along here, walk along this path. Here's this great stuff that inspires you. So, I encourage you. Put yourself on the phone or find friends. Use meetup groups. Use Facebook groups. Find a way to get into communities with people who encourage one another, love unapologetically to do what you love doing, and people you can share that experience with. Find those people. Talk to them on the phone. Be inspired. More later.
It's Dino Night.
So wait, so when was this you squeegeed your whole car?
Oh, it was last summer. Hey, look at that. That's cool. I got a microphone.
So how long did it take for you to do it then?
About 18 minutes. It's a Corolla SR586. Mm-hmm. She's a cherry. I got her with 90.
She's a cherry.
Yeah, I got her with 90
a shiny one she is.
98,000 miles on that puppy.
Wow,
30-year-old
dude.
Car, man. I'm
dude, that's incredible. Yikes. It looks like the DeLorean's next door neighbor.
It kind of is. I was thinking of dressing it up like a DeLorean for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I could like go as like Marty McFly and you know, time travel this thing.
And maybe just so people know.
Maybe I'll take the car to 1957 Halloween as the DeLorean.
Oh, so you're saying when you're squeegeeing this was on a Halloween, you say?
No, it wasn't, but I was thinking of actually dressing up my car like a DeLorean.
Oh, that's right, yeah, and then take it back then to, on a Halloween.
On a Halloween.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
She's ready for flight, man. 1.21 gigawatts.
Well, I'm thinking, just so people know, you could put a bumper sticker on there that says, this is powered by a flux capacitor. Just so people know, it's the next door neighbor, the DeLorean.
It could be. It could very well be that. Maybe a give no flux capacitor.
Oh, I like that.
No flux given.
No flux given.
No?
That's good.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about that. Mm-hmm. Boy, I like that microphone there. That's
It gets everything.
It looks like it's...
I can hear your organs moving with this one.
You still got a fair amount of control. And it looks like you could... you could maybe apply a nice coat of blush to them.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you how many looks I get from people in the street when they see me with this. Some kids, I was in Chinatown, they're like... Oh, fucking A, man. No way. That is dope shit, man. And he was pointing at my
microphone.
You're
the man on the scene. You're the man on the streets. You're the man with the plan. You're the man no one can beat.
That's right.
Gas prices are crazy, by the way. I don't know what's going on, but I'm paying for the bad stuff today.
Well, maybe
I'm looking at $3.80 per gallo.
Well, maybe
for the bad. Stuff.
I wonder what Vincent Gallo is thinking of how expensive the gallows are.
He probably doesn't think about any of that.
To the gallows!
He's just probably getting some young starlet to, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for his next movie. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going mobile?
So I wonder if, like, growing up he heard, to the gallows! A lot. And then people got scared thinking that they're going to take him to the gallows to get hung, but really they're just going to the gallows, the Vincent Gallo family Christmas party or whatever.
Do you remember that guy? I used to know a guy named Gallo.
Oh my God, you did know a Gallo.
I used to rent an apartment from a guy named Gallo.
Oh, shit.
Gallo was actually friends with Billy Zabka.
Oh,
and
that's
now Billy Zabka's in Cobra Kai.
Dude, incredible.
And what's crazy is, here's what's crazy about Billy Zabka, man. So he was being interviewed about the Cobra Kai project, and he was saying that through the years, he's been offered a lot of different things. And he was saying, you know, some people came at me with different spoofs of The Karate Kid. Well, you know, I was one of those people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we almost made something happen, but maybe we can now, you know?
I think so.
Very.
In fact, me thinks so.
Me thinks so as well, me thinks. All right, sweet.
You know, it's so funny, like, this is, would you say 10 years ago you had your spoof?
More than that, yeah, more than that.
Because I'm looking to see if this wraps up with the idea that we were talking the other day, where we got the 10-year, you know, we got the recycling of the 10-year turnaround
going on. Certainly we have a recycling effect. This is actually further than that, so maybe it's an even more profound.
A precursor. Yeah, it's like one of the, it helped move it along.
It was actually, the original idea was going to be a short film, and I thought of that in, like, early 2001. And then we, Rocco and I, we got the script written in 2005. We met Billy in 2002. It was really weird because Gallo, we were talking to him about that we had this karaoke movie idea, and Gallo is actually the Southern California karaoke champ, which is really weird. And then we told him it was going to be this kind of like a little bit of a spoof on The Karate Kid. And he said, well, you know, I actually know Johnny Lawrence.
Oh, my God.
He's one of my best friends.
Dude.
And we ended up, and the weirdest part about it was, to just bring this sucker full circle, is that we ended up meeting Billy at a karaoke club.
Oh,
at
of course.
At Cozy's Karaoke.
God.
And he was really kind of pumped up about the idea, but you know, I'm happy for him. He had us over by his place, and he was a nice guy, and I'm happy that the Cobra Kai thing is doing so well. I haven't even watched it yet, though, I'll confess.
I gotta say, it's awesome. It's so cool. My buddy has, one of the Outlet Crew guys has it, and so I use that login, and I've been watching it. I gotta tell you, it's so fun, because it is just like, it's got an 80s movie vibe. They have flashbacks. They put pieces of the movies into the TV show as flashbacks. It's phenomenal.
It's pretty crazy. I did see some of the...
Dude, the way that it's edited and everything, the music.
Oh. And you know, it's cool because John Hurwitz is behind that, and of course...
Oh, he is?
Well, yeah, it's him and the Harold Kumar guys that are doing
what?
It.
I didn't know that.
And Hurwitz, you know, of course, we're friends on Facebook and the whole, you know, Hi Amsterdam thing. You know, it all comes full circle. And
I love
on Facebook, you know, I'm friends with Billy, and I'm friends with Hayden and John.
Jeez.
And, you know, hey, kitty cat. Yeah, so it's good. All right, we're at the Casa now.
We are at the Casa. So we will talk more later.
It's great. You know, folksy kind of, very melodic. I mean, that, of course, they're also just amazing. I mean, they're fucking amazing. Those guys were incredible. You know, and all that stuff was, you know, people might take that as lightweight stuff, but it's some of the best, stuff ever done. It's just that it spawned a genre that got shitty, you know, all the disco stuff. Because it becomes like this thing where people just look at the elements. It's kind of like when Nirvana came along, and Nirvana had these loud, slamming songs that with the heavy drums and the guitars and the screaming, but it was melodic. You could take Nirvana and you could play it in an elevator like Muzak. But everybody else that came along, well, I mean, I'd say Soundgarden was great too, and Stone Temple Pilot. But there was a ton of shitty, you know, grunge bands that just came along and just were loud.
So they looked at just, like you were saying, just those elements, and they try to think, oh, right, well, that's what makes the magic, right? Because right, they're looking at, like...
Yeah, it's like, well, okay, I like with disco, oh, it's four to the floor, and it's, we're going to use these instruments, and it's got this kind of groove. And you just put out a bunch of those kind of songs, but it's the top line melodies and the craftsmanship of those songs, like, dude, the Bee Gees, it holds up. You could do any of those songs in another style, and they work. They don't need to be disco. They don't need to be. You know, you could turn them into something else, and, you know, but, and that's just like that. Or people just think that they can, I mean, it's actually kind of just making me think of Eminem, right? Well, when he had a line in one of his songs, and he's like, 20 million other white rappers emerge, or whatever, you know, like, assuming that there was going to be this big rush of white rappers because, you know, Elvis came along and did the rock and roll thing, and, you know, and then a bunch of, you know, kind of white people came along and did rock and roll. But it's interesting with hip-hop, nobody can really do what Eminem does. So that was kind of funny. Like he didn't, like... It's really weird.
Well,
you know?
To be fair, I think Snow came pretty close.
Informer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
You don't say that many Snow, you make a plan.
Yeah, he was cool. He was from Canada.
Oh, wow.
Which, great name if you're from Canada.
Yeah, it is.
You know, open up the door, look around, and go, hey, I got a rap name.
Yeah.
And it turns out he's white.
Yeah.
But, we're going to be caught up in some traffic, Bubba.
So Eminem decided, he thought that maybe there was going to be a big influx of more
of that, but it really hasn't happened. You know what I mean? It really hasn't happened. Because I think that Eminem, culturally speaking, he's a black kid. I mean, you know, he just comes from an authentic place with it, you know, and his work ethic and his talent, like, it takes serious hours to get that good. And, no, I mean, don't get me wrong, though. There's a ton of, like, underground, you know, and Eminem was underground. There's a ton of underground, you know, white talent, you know, white rap talent. But, you know, Eminem somehow pulled off this thing, you know, with Dre coming on board where it was pop. But it is kind of strange. As much as I love Eminem, his stuff doesn't hold up well, which is weird. And I think that that's because he just pop culture referenced so much that it's just so dated.
Oh.
You know, Britney Spears and right, calling like, out all the NSYNC. It's just it's so super dated.
That makes sense.
That a lot of his stuff doesn't hold up as well as I thought it would back in the day. It just really hasn't really. I mean, I still listen to it, but it's kind of a funny thing. He's sort of a kind of zeitgeist type of rapper. Like, he'd be in the moment with some kind of current news event and this rap about it, whether it was Marilyn Manson or somebody, you know, getting under his skin, Christina Aguilera or something, and all that stuff. You know, I mean, imagine if you were like a young kid, you'd come across it and it might be an interesting, almost like archival thing, like, oh, who are those people he's talking
about? Yeah.
And they're fun songs, but as incredible, I mean, he was the top earning music artist he's the top earning music artist, I think, of the 21st century, I'm pretty sure. He was the top-selling hip-hop artist, for sure, for, you know, the first decade of the century. But I don't know if he holds up, you know? It's kind of weird.
Do you think maybe he has an alter ego
that's... What I say is I think Tupac holds up better than Eminem. But I think Eminem is a much, 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 much better rapper. Like, a much better rapper. But Tupac's songs feel timeless. Almost like they're... Yeah, they're like these, I think there's actually courses taught in college about Tupac and Tupac's lyrics and songs.
Interesting.
And the cultural importance of what he did. But, yeah. Okay, well, we are...
So, do you think it's because Eminem was using so many pop culture references that that's why he's kind of frozen in time? He's kind of given them, you know, yeah. It's like a time capsule that's just kind of like there. It'd be similar to, like, let's say, oh gosh, what's his name? The Frank Sinatra guy, the recent guy, oh God, Tony Bennett. It'd be like him throwing in culture references, like his old songs all being about, you know, I don't know, Three Stooges yeah. or whatever was going on back then.
Yeah, no, totally. That's totally what it would be like. You know, I just had an interesting thought about Eminem. I want to explore this.
Yep.
Here's a strange thing. You know, he used to catch a whole lot of hell from the left politically, you know, for the things he would say, you know, gays and against women and, you know, and he used to catch all this crap, you know, and then he sort of did a little PR thing with Elton John and tried to settle that. But there was still like this big, you know, pushback against him from the left. And it's just funny now because he decides to go out and he does a bunch of stuff about Donald Trump. And now all of a sudden he's like this champion of the left, you know, and it's just kind of weird. It's like these same people mm-hmm. 10 years ago really hated him. And I just think it's kind of funny how he's kind of chasing down the, again, sniffing out the zeitgeist. Like, well, pretty easy target, you know? And yeah, he's super clever, but that's kind of like an easy target. It's kind of an easy win. It's low-hanging fruit. Like, he used to be the rebel guy, and then now he's sort of lined up with more of the popular kind of sentiment. And it's very weird to me, yeah. like how he made that shift. So I don't know. I just made that.
Low hanging sentiments.
That sounds like a. Could you crack the window a little? I know oh, for yeah. sound, but we need a little crossover. I'm going to.
Low hanging sentiments.
I'm wearing I made an unfortunate sweater decision.
Out of foil.
No, they construct
one of those foil things that they give you at marathons
I made an unfortunate sweater decision. I'm currently wearing a sweater that's 15 degrees too stupid for this trip and sweltering a little, so I've opened up the windows. The sound might be affected, but I need to be comfortable and cozy for this next half hour.
However, to the Alaskians who are listening to this, it would be perfect in your region.
Is it Alaskians? I guess so. Alaskians... Probably Alaskians better.
It just sounds more vocabularic.
It does. You know, Alaskian, it's like, it's a little more, what would that...
Is there something like, kind of exotic about it?
It is. It almost, it puts a favorable spin on the icy region we know of as Alaska. Alaskian... It's a little more, like, luxurious. It's kind of like rich Corinthian leather.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
It makes you feel like Ricardo Montalban's ghost might be...
Rich Alaskian
might
snow.
Might be riding an avalanche down the side with Hervé Villechaize.
Hervé.
It's a Villechaize. That poor little guy
Hervé
shot...
Hervé Villechaize.
You know...
I've always loved
look,
that guy.
I do. I love him. And I'm going to do a little disclaimer. I don't want to speak ill of the gone, okay? But I will admit... The way that little man took himself out, you know, he shot himself in the body, okay, oof. With shotgun. Now, I don't know, I'm imagining it was a sawed-off shotgun. That sounds so bad, but I'm imagining his little arms extended, turning a shotgun onto his torso. Yeah. And there was recordings of it back in the day. This is getting a little dark for a podcast, but there was recordings that were on, like, 2020 or something back in the day, and he was, help me, help. Like, you know, it didn't happen quickly. It was sort of sad. But anyway, that's a dark thing. But Tattoo, rest in peace. Well, Hervé Villechaize.
Did you know that...
Perfect chemistry, those two.
What is that guy? The little guy on Game of Thrones is going to play him in a
Peter
biopic.
Dinklage?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Uh-huh.
Well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. How Mexican
okay,
is
so
he?
Where are the where are the politically correct people right now who should be clamoring against why don't they cast a little Mexican?
Yeah.
Because I think they're whitewashing the role.
That's right around the corner. That's right around the corner.
The Villechaize estate. The Villechaize.
Well, and then there'll be counter protests by little people going, what? You're saying that just because you hate little people. Right?
That's true.
There'll be counter protests.
Well, here's the thing. There's so many ways to slice a person.
And then counter protests on that with the Mexican
so
little people going, well, wait a second.
There's so many ways to categorize people, and it seems very arbitrary. And the thing is, you know, it's like as these little chunks, these little segments keep getting, you know, divvied up, it's sort of like LGBTQRXYW.
Absolutely.
HY2C3PO.
Yeah.
You know, robots will be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it all ends up, what the funny thing is, this guy called that intersectionality. But it's all arbitrary where you decide to intersect those things. Well, it's all, well, what if you're a, you know, midget? What if you're an African-American midget homosexual? Right, right. I mean, that would be a way to slice it. But here's the thing, man. Okay, people, listen up. The thing is, our culture was based on individuality. And when you keep slicing, 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 what it ultimately comes down to, oddly enough, is you circle back to the person.
Yeah.
You're a one of one. You know, when we're younger, we tribe up, we group up, we go in cliques. But as we get older, you become more and more and more and more singular because you've lived a life that becomes more and more and more yours and specific. When you're younger,
yes,
you have more shared experiences, more collective things. But as you get older, you just start, you know, defining yourself as a singular being. And so all of this nonsense of how to categorize people in collectivist thinking, I think, is nonsense. I don't know.
It's interesting with, you know, because ultimately, like we were talking about earlier today, it's such a joy to be able to hang out with you and be able to talk about synchronicities, talk about these, you know, what would be sometimes considered, you know, outlandish ideas,
right.
So completely absurd, surreal, and okay, guys, reel it in, let's get back to reality, okay, reel it in. So it's so nice to be able to, like, just go completely
kind of funny what you said.
Boundless, right?
Reel it in.
Oh, interesting. Reel it in. Which, actually, we're doing the biggest reeling in that anybody could ever imagine,
right,
the farther out we get.
Well, what is real? Here's a jump-off point for this next segment of our podcast.
Uh-huh.
What is real, right? I'm going to just rip this right off. I was talking earlier about, you know, Jordan Peterson, you know, who's gaining traction in the media. And, you know, he's some people's hero and he's some people's villain. But he has this great sort of take, perspective, on the idea of reality. And he sort of gave the example of a married couple, right? So you've been married to your wife for 25 years, and, you know, you've had this really happy marriage, and it's been very satisfying to you, and you've had trips together, and you've had children, and you've really built a life together, and it's really been a special journey for you. And then let's say that you find out that she's, like, cheating on you, right? And okay, that's a shock, right? Oh, you've seen this other guy. But let's say then you find out that not only is she cheating on you, but she's been cheating on you, like, the entire time. Right? Well, think about that now, okay? What is real? Because you hear people say this, they say, well, was the marriage even real? And it's not that crazy to say, you know what, it wasn't. And well, now what has to happen is you have to reconcile 25 years of your whole existence as you're living in a false narrative. And
now
that's a tough thing to stomach. Now, so what is real? What is that? What's going on there? Okay, because that's not a material reality. And I think that's where Jordan makes a good case against materialism is, you know, the materialists are like, well, reality is this sort of concrete stuff. Well, maybe not, because we live in a psychological space.
Yeah.
And it's a Carl Jung kind of thing where he's like, you know, we don't have ideas. Ideas have us.
Yeah.
We're captivated. And so this man is captivated by the idea of his marriage. And that idea is real enough to give him peace and to give him happiness. And when that's torn apart, it's a complete betrayal, and he's literally been disintegrated. His life's been evaporated. What a strange thing. It's no different. Like, how is that any different than a building coming down? Right? Your whole life comes apart. You go, that's no different than a building coming down. So, you know, that's an interesting argument about reality.
It really is, because then it really sits you back in the driver's seat of choice. What reality do you want to choose to believe, you know?
Yeah.
As you're saying, no matter where you're going, well, as the old phrase goes, wherever you go, there you are. My Uncle Arnie loved saying it, wherever you go, there you are.
Uh-huh.
And so that psychological space, you're taking that psychological space with you wherever you're going.
Right.
So it's so funny because those who are saying, well, reality is what's concrete, well, as Dude would say, well, that's just your opinion, man.
right?
So maybe to another person, the most real thing to me is the imagination in my brain,
right.
You know? Now, who's the author and who's the judge of saying, this one is actually more of the real thing than that one? Because then that person who's the judge of it is actually that subjective as well, because then they're basing it on whatever reality. And then what? You got to go down the rabbit hole and find out where their belief system is based on. Oh, did he listen to a lot of, you know, oh, does he have credentials? And, you know, it's like, listen,
right,
you know, we are, everybody's living in some sort of delusion.
Right.
It's just,
and it's
which
sort of
delusion?
Necessary, right. It's a necessary delusion.
Yeah, whether it's the 9-to-5 stuck in a cubicle delusion, whether it's a artist staying, you know, at home painting all day delusion, well, whether it's the, you know, taking care of animals all day delusion, you know, whatever the thing is.
Yeah, well, the thing is that we have to sort of have a delusion by necessity, meaning as you're looking at the world, it needs to be in a fairly low resolution so that you can handle it. Mm. In other words, it's like, if you actually processed all the information around you, look at this, we're right now, by the way, we're driving south on the 405, and if you look around this 405, there's a lot going on here right now.
Yeah.
But in order for me to kind of stay the course, I've got to really only concern myself with some key variables.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so our perception of reality kind of stops at a lower resolution, another JPP term, but I love that. But if we wanted to go deeper, we could. Like, I could get into what goes into the bumper of that car.
Oh, right.
What goes out. Like, you could go in, and that is also actually there. It's just that we're not...
Right.
You know, so... And the other sort of thing that we need sort of evolutionary-wise is this... You know, why negative... It's kind of like why negative news commands a lot of attention, because really, for survival, we have to... A few things could kill us, right? It's like, so we're sort of programmed to be on a bit of alert for something that might be negative. So, you know, when you have a headline that says, you know, this additive in your food could give you cancer.
Yeah.
You're going to click on that because, well, what the hell is it? I don't want cancer.
Yeah.
Whereas I might say, well, this food could, you know, give you more energy. You'd be like, well, okay, I know how to get more energy. Maybe you got like 7 other ideas for that. But something that might kill you or something that might hurt you, you have to pay attention to.
Mm.
And so we take safe routes a lot because if I drive the same way to work every day and I didn't die, I want to repeat not dying, so I take the same route.
Mm.
And it starts to carve a groove. And we take the same route in many things that we choose to do. Things we say, beliefs we have, because while we go, well, 100% of the time, I haven't died from doing it. Well, think about that. So people are stuck in so many grooves because, as far as they're concerned, it's worked so far.
Yeah,
yeah. And it really isn't until they're doing something that might threaten their own existence that they might want to change. So to voluntarily go outside your comfort zone, it's a bit, you're bucking a little bit of nature, but at the same time, you're a pioneer, you're an explorer. Nothing great has happened without exploration. Lewis and Clark, you know, you have to be
willing.
That's
the only way you discover stuff is by exploring.
And so the stories, the archetypes, and what I've also learned through JPB is this idea of sacrifice is as old as time, right? The Bible, Cain and Abel and these things, you know, Job, waiting around. You know, when you're willing to sacrifice for a bigger reward, there's something magical in that.
Mm.
When you're willing to stay within your, stick to your guns, you know, and hold your integrity, it's almost like you will get rewarded for that sacrifice almost every time. It's really bizarre. You know, you can take the big prize now and maybe sell your soul a little, or you could sort of stick to the things that bring you that give you that meaning. And when you're there with that meaning, you know you're there. And I think everybody knows. Hey, that guy was playing a mean dashboard drum, by the way.
Oh, good.
Anyway, very cool to see somebody just whapping along on the dashboard, playing a nice lick.
Yeah.
But you know, that's sort of where meaning is at. When you just know that that's the right thing you should be doing, not because of some financial reward, but then oddly enough, when you do that kind of stuff, seems like the financial rewards sort of find their way to you.
Yeah, it's like a byproduct that
it is a natural.
Only comes to you because you're not looking for it, huh? It's like, hey, pay attention to me now. You
right,
know, it ends
exactly.
up becoming this interesting.
Absolutely. And, you know, what are you willing to sacrifice? And because sacrifice is this strange thing about not knowing, you know, because you go, well, I'm pretty sure if I do this, there might be a payoff, but you're not sure because it's the future. Right?
Mm.
You don't know. So there's also another part of this whole comfort zone thing, because people live in the moment hedonistically sometimes. When we say in the moment in this context, meaning sort of like a slave to your desires, which is a different thing than being present.
Mm.
That's a very different thing. Because I feel like if you're present, say, working on an art piece that's going to turn into a big mural, you're not just quenching some kind of like sugar fixation, you know, licking a salt lick or just having like cheap sex. You're doing something with the idea that this bigger picture, in this case the mural, quite literally, is going to come together. But you don't have a guarantee that it will. And that's kind of what the same idea of being a pioneer is. You don't know, but you're pretty damn sure it still matters to stay on that course. And that's why telling the truth matters. And that's what art is. If you tell the truth, it might hurt you in the short term. You might say something that rubs someone the wrong way. But you gotta bank on that. You gotta put those truth coins in the bank because you can cash in on the truth later. You live your life of truth, you get rewarded with a big truth prize. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
That's awesome.
Riff on that idea.
I like that. Well, then what's interesting too, like if we truly are following our intuition, like the, you know, carving the path, so to speak, and exploring and following our intuition, and the more we trust that, no matter what, there won't be anxiety, there won't be worry, there won't be anything if you're completely fine with following what that calling is and you stay the course with it. Now there's no like, oh geez, I really hope it turns out right, or oh gosh, I'm working really hard at this. No, none of that stuff even has to enter the equation then,
right?
Because now it's like, it becomes this thing of like you're actually truly creating your future, you know?
Yeah.
And
well, Buckminster Fuller, the best way to predict the future is to design it.
Oh God, that's so brilliant. And that goes right along with the idea of creating the art that you want to see in the world. Because if that's the case, if you're creating the art that you want to see in the world, well then there's no outside authority telling you whether
right.
something's shitty or not. You're just going, okay, you know what? Am I okay with this? You know, am I fine with where it wants to lead me?
Right.
And if you go easy on that and go, yeah, and be gentle with it and go, yeah, okay, you know what, yeah, I'm going to let it take me where it wants to go. Holy moly. Now we've opened up the universe to be able to offer us so many wonderful surprises and circumstances that come our way.
We got to keep going because I'm paying attention to a little exit coming up. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me pause this now before we get a phone call coming in.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.